Welcome to yet another episode of the Dependent Variable Podcast. Now, data science has received quite some hype in Kenya in the past 5 years across multiple sectors. There's strong indication that this is due to a wave of digitization happening across board. Data professionals therefore need to be adaptive and agile to fit across different domains. Today, I, Victor Muchengo, and my fellow co-hosts, Mariam Haji and Anthony Odhiambo, will be having a chat with Miles Obare, a software engineer at Microsoft, on his journey working in and leading teams in different sectors. Enjoy. So I'm joined by my co-hosts, Mariam Haji and Anthony Odhiambo, and my name is Victor Muchengo. Welcome. Okay, so before we start, I think let's give a shout out to Kate Gitau. Kate is doing her master's in AI at AIMS in Ghana. So wherever you are listening from, Kate, you better be listening. I hope you're doing well. Yeah, so welcome, Miles. Welcome, Miriam. Miles, you're a senior citizen in this data science world in Kenya. So tell us your personal story. How did you end up here?
The opinion is expressed here my own, and they don't actually represent the company. For official communication, always look at the press from Microsoft. Okay, I'm senior ages. But yeah, thank you for having me. I'm so excited. So, and I'm so excited about speaking to people who want to get into the field. Myself, I can't call myself as senior as the senior researchers in the field, but my background, basically, I did electrical and computer engineering in college, and then I did a lot of software engineering in a few startups here in Nairobi, and right now I'm a software engineer at Microsoft.
Okay. Not every day we meet guys working in Fortune 500 companies. How does that feel?
Fortune 500, it's a lot to learn. So it's a new experience, especially when you're coming from a startup world. Okay. You're like, it's a shift in your career and you have to relearn a lot of things that you thought you knew.
Okay.
Yeah.
Was it hard?
Yes. Yes, it's very hard. Okay. To be honest, up to now, I can't really say I'm an expert in the corporate world.
Okay.
I'm just trying to like find my way around and study from senior people, study from my peers.
Yeah.
So that I get my way around this company and in the industry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but well, I made a joke of you being a senior citizen, but in actual sense, you've achieved a lot in what I would say is a short span of time. What sparked your curiosity around how to get into data? Because you started off as an engineer, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So yeah, I started off as an engineer. I am right now still an engineer.
Which
in
one?
The data science. So yeah, I initially did a lot of programming, building web applications, mobile applications, backend systems, database. And then at that time, I didn't have a clue about data science, especially in Kenya. I think it was new. It was in early 2014, late 2013.
Yeah.
And then I worked for a startup in Nairobi here near Kileleshwa, and we were working with this big client, a securities exchange firm. They had massive data sets. So okay. We were brought in as software engineers to deal with that data problem.
Okay.
That's when we realized we need to have data skills. Okay. So that's when I started taking extra courses online to cater for the shortage in data knowledge.
Okay.
And then eventually just started loving the field. And then I moved to a betting company. Now I was doing full-time data science and sometimes helping the engineering teams. And as I progressed, I realized like it's a whole big field, it's a new field, it's a career path for everyone. So yeah, that's how basically it happened.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. You made it sound easy.
Very easy.
Yeah, too easy. Okay. Yeah. And then so throughout your stint so far in data science, you've worked across different sectors. You've transitioned from, you know, a purely software background to something that's very commercial and driven by human behavior that was betting, and now you're back to something that's very software. So how has the transition been? Did you find it difficult?
No, I really think it's how you position your mind to learn new things. So I started with dealing data for a securities exchange firm, stocks, yes, trading, prices, equities, bonds, and such. And then I moved to a fintech startup. It was dealing with credit scoring, fraud detection, micro loans for customers. And then I moved now to a betting company. We are dealing with games, odds, outcomes, risks, and such.
Yeah.
And right now I'm at Microsoft. I'm dealing basically with telemetry data.
Okay. Yeah,
so it's gigabytes of data that you need to extract insights for customers.
Sounds fun.
Terabytes, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Those sound like big problems.
So transitioning is not hard. You just have to really have to learn. You have to have that learning mindset. Don't be a fixed mindset that I'm a back end, I'm not going to shift, I'm going to be extra good in this.
Okay.
Just try out something for a few months and see if it works.
All right. So at one point, I think you told me your story. You were once head of data science within a brief stint. How was that like? What does a head of data science do?
Sleepless nights, probably. But yeah, the difference, it was a startup. So in startups in Nairobi, being ahead and being a normal data science, really, there's no clear definition. You are the head of data science. You are in charge of the company data. You're like the custodian. You need to answer questions concerning data to other teams. If it's the marketing team, they need some questions about which customers are churning. You need to answer that. If it's the finance team, they want to know the performance of the product. You need to answer that. So as the head, you're really the custodian. You're the one who is in charge of the data of the company. So regardless of you having your subordinates to do the actual work or you're doing it yourself, you are still the one who is liable for that aspect of the company. Yeah.
So what makes a good data professional?
A good data professional. Data professional. It can be a data scientist, a data engineer. It can be a data analyst and such. Basically, once you're saying you're a data professional, you need to have a love for data. That's one thing I realized. Most software engineers, they have this buzz of data science. They hear the buzz, they jump into data science, and then they realize it's more of insights, less of bug fixing. In software engineering, you're doing a lot of bug fixing and development.
Okay.
In data fields, you're analyzing, you're looking at data, you're thinking fast before you even try to execute. And yeah, I think that's what makes the difference for a data professional.
Ken, what makes a really, really good data professional?
A really, really, like, really good data professional.
Give advice to people. What do they have to do to be really a really, really good data professional? Because you were ahead in a data science team. So what criteria makes a really, really good data professional?
So I'm going to answer this from not only data fields, but even in software engineering. If you want to be really good, the difference is always the impact you make. If you are a normal guy in the company, you're doing your job by the requirements. Your boss gives you A, B, C, D. You do them A, B, C, D on time. You are a good data professional. You can do your tasks. You know what you're doing, right? But if you really want to go the extra mile, you need to make impact. You need to go out of your comfort zone. You need to leverage other people in the company and then bring new insights. And really, people who make a difference in these fields, these are people who go beyond the normal limits set by the field. So if the boss tells you do task A and do task B, you'll find a really, really good person will do task A and B and try to come up with new insights between these two tasks and if they can be merged into one to reduce cost and such. So yeah, you need to focus on impact.
Okay, cool. So let's take you back to your new gig. First of all, congratulations. I'm really excited to see what you're able to achieve there. What does a typical day look like for you right now? How has that changed?
A typical day.
Yes. Is there a typical day?
Yeah. A typical day, probably get to the office, have some coffee.
Coffee is important.
Coffee is important. You need to be super, super awake. And then you usually have your meetings scheduled. If it's, you get at the office at 10, then you have an hour or two meetings by 12 or 12:30. So these are usually design meetings whereby if it's a new product you're working on, you're trying to design the product. If it's an existing product, you're trying to fix issues with the product. And then you're setting the timelines with your PM, with your manager and such. And then you have from 12 to 1, if you take lunch at 1, you can go back to your desk, do a bit of coding or exploration of the data, just finding the relevant sources of data you want to use. And then lunchtime, of course, concentration goes to zero. You go to lunch with your colleagues. And then you if it's served in the office, you just have a quick lunch and then you get back to your desk around 2:30. So my concentration is usually in the afternoon to the evening. So from 2:30, meetings I tend to them in the morning because I don't usually like waking up very early. Some people do the work in the morning and then meetings in the evening. So you have the whole afternoon to concentrate, you code. Yeah, you're also waiting for traffic to ease. So you have extra reasons to do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. So no surprises during
the... There are surprises in terms of routine.
Yeah, there are no routine surprises.
It's different. In a corporate, it's more structured.
Okay.
In a startup, it's like, I'm just going to show up whenever I'm ready.
Okay.
Or you just feel like today I'm just going to work from home.
That was a
so it just
startup.
You have to have an understanding with your manager first.
All right.
If they support remote working,
okay,
and you feel like you don't want to go to the office, you can do it from home.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome.
So Miles, you've worked in different sectors for the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
How important is domain expertise and in your job, and how long does it take to get used to a particular industry?
So, as I said, I worked at a securities firm, a stock exchange firm, and then I worked at a fintech, and then I worked at a betting company, and now at a bigger company. So the difference is, in as much as most data scientists don't really think it's domain knowledge is important, but in my view and from what I've seen especially in the fintech world, you need a bit of domain knowledge. For example, if you're working on a product for, let's say you want to detect some disease, right? It's a type of cancer. You need to kind of understand. And you don't need to be a doctor, but you need to know the general characteristics, the general features that specify this type of disease from the other one. So domain knowledge, you kind of need to have, you need to have an idea of what's going on in the field and just not be an expert. You don't have to be an expert in the field. For example, if it's fintech, you don't have to be an actuary. You don't have to be a financial risk analyst. But you can at least know things about credit scoring, fraud, and such. Yeah.
Generally, how long does it take? Do you find it a struggle to gain that domain expertise?
No, I think the more you hang out in the company with these people, the more you know what's going on. For example, in the fintech, I had an actuary and a financial risk analyst. So we would see it and then he would tell me how things work in the field. How do you analyze the credit worthiness of a customer in the financial world? How do you detect fraud manually on paper or such, and then you try to understand how these things are done in the field and how they can be put into code or they can be put into software. So you kind of just, you don't have to be an expert, go take PDFs, take heavy books for this field. No, just hang out with these people, talk with them. If it's in the same company with your colleagues, hang out with them, talk with them, or just socialize with them, and then they'll pass over the knowledge to you seamlessly. Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a data specialty?
Yes.
Oh, do tell.
Actually, my specialty is kind of an intersection of data and normal engineering.
Okay.
So I have a very, very, very keen interest in distributed systems. So I'm just going to explain that. So distributed systems basically is production data, data in production.
Mm-hmm.
That includes data pipelines.
Okay.
Data ingestion from the source, pre-processing, then to the final destination.
Okay.
And then the last aspect is taking these models to production and then scaling them and doing A/B testing. For example, if your data science team has a version one of the model and then they want to test version B, but they don't want to affect all of the customers, they do what we call A/B testing.
Yeah.
They partition some customers to use model B, and the rest of the customers to remain at model A.
Okay.
Then they track performance of these new customers who are using model B. And if it's performing well, they gradually shift customers to model B. If it's not performing well, they gradually shift the customers back to model A and repeat that. So having that infrastructure is what I'm having an interest in, taking this model from this experienced data scientist, productionalizing them, and then iterating through the process. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, cool. So let's talk data science economics. So there's increased interest around, you know, how to apply data to solve, or rather to use data as a strategic lever for companies, right? So, but in your experience, you know, like as someone who's worked in different sectors, how do you, number one, measure, you know, return on investment by adopting such a practice? And number two, is it worth it?
Data.
Yeah, or rather, better way to put it would be, how do you identify that point where data becomes, you know, a problem that needs a massive investment?
Yeah. Okay, that's a funny question. I think most people, they rush to, they have a product, but they try to force it to be a data product.
Okay.
So if you want to really know the relevance of data in your product, the first thing I usually think is good and I encourage is always work on a prototype first that's not advanced. Don't spend your years trying to do a perfect model.
Okay.
See the viability of this product first.
Okay.
If it's return of investment, for example, if it's profit, you're seeing revenue generated and such. And take now the aspect of data and try to bring it in. If you're doing credit scoring using your traditional rules and you've seen how it performs and the revenue, the defaults and such, now try to do a simple model first, and as in the end, it always matters about the money outcome.
Yeah.
You always want to see revenue, increase in revenue.
Yes.
So if you see that this model, this data aspect is not really, it's taking the revenues down, it's taking the profits down, then you really need to rethink if your product is actually a data product or it's not.
So Kweche, cash is king, eh?
Cash is, I usually feel like it's novel ideas are in the lab.
Okay.
Where you have grants and such from organization, governments.
Yes.
Once you come to this outside and you're running startups, you're paying rent and such, you don't have to kill yourself if you just leave the data part for a while.
Okay. So just on that point of figuring out how your problem actually is a data problem. Can you give us just a quick run through of how you incorporate things like ML into a data product?
Incorporating in terms of I usually think like you should, as I said, first have your traditional way of doing things and then come up with this new data aspect. If it's model A, B, or C and such, try to compare the performance by doing A-B testing. If it's actually performing good, then you can gradually shift the product to the data side. If it's not, then rethink again the data. Either the data you're using is not good, or the way you're looking at it is not good. It's not okay. So, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about democratization of AI. We've seen there's a notable focus on auto ML products, like we have Google.
AutoML.
Google AutoML. Some companies also provide SAS machine learning, where you just upload your data and it gives you predictions. Yeah, so do you see a future where people who don't have AI expertise just use the system without really understanding what they're doing?
Yes. I think democratization is good because you want people to achieve their goal. You don't want people to take PhDs, all of them. Yeah. You don't want
What's
everyone to take a PhD.
PhD.
You know,
Kate, are you listening?
No, you have all these researchers, and then you have all these people want to quickly prototype things. So that's why I think democratization comes in handy. So yeah, I'm going to give an example. I don't know if it's not ad. It's not ad, yeah. So yeah, we had like the company had an event, a hackathon for students who didn't have a background in machine learning.
Yes.
They were to use the Azure tools on the company cloud. And the top students who came out, they didn't have a background in things like convolutional neural nets or computer vision. They took their image, they used the automated tools online on the cloud, they trained, and then they actually deployed the model. So such an example is the importance of having this democratization tool is like you try to solve problems without having a high cost of paying high education fees and such, and you don't want to scare people into the field with math and such. Yeah. And then you usually find like most of these people, they actually love the outcome. They get back now to the theory and then they start now exploring the in-depth. But in the end, you always need people with PhDs and who are spending time in the lab to come up with these tools.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. So, and basically, just on that point of AutoML products,
yes,
the level of abstraction, do you feel that it adds it contributes again to that problem of, models being black boxes? Does it worsen the situation?
In terms of setting, AutoML, these tools, how they work is you have your data set. Most of them don't have the data for your business need, right? You come with the data, and then the configurations that they allow you to set are things like the number of layers in the network and such, right? So the bias, if the bias is in the data, for example, if it's a gender bias or a diversity, race bias and such, then these auto ML tools, the job is not, you have to remove bias in the data first. Yeah. So I feel like they are abstracting the technical details. They are not abstracting the data,
itself.
Your data.
Okay.
Yeah.
The nature of it.
Yes.
The data itself is.
So for example, they will abstract the training servers.
Okay.
It doesn't matter if the server is Linux or Windows or also Solaris or such. In as much as the training will happen in any of these server, if the data is biased, the outcome will will come out biased. So these kind of abstractions, I don't really think will bring in bias, but yeah, sometimes it's good to have finer control over everything. Okay. So my advice is always, if you want to fine tune and have exact control, then go deep down. Okay. But if you want to quickly prototype, just use the tools, prototype, viability, and make sure there's no bias in the original data.
Okay.
Yeah.
So walk us through the process of conceptualizing a data product that uses ML.
Okay, do you use an example? Okay, let me just do a general one. And then
you can use an example.
Yeah. So these the normal steps that every data science needs to know, like exploring the data, and then before you even go to model selection and such, right? So, but okay, I'm just going to give the approach that I usually use. They usually think works for me.
Okay.
Okay.
And then you can adopt it.
You can also tell us why you think it works for you.
Yes. I'll do that. So the first thing is most companies have multiple sources of data.
Okay. Yeah. True.
So the first thing you need to understand is like the product first. Then try to, if the management is bringing a proposal, like they want to see, hey, we want to increase revenues, and how can ML do this, right? Mm-hmm. You just have to first know the viability of that. Can you answer, is it a data question or not, first, before you even rush into like selecting the data, cleaning it and such. So that's like you're doing your background research on the problem set first. And then after you've researched on the product and you've seen that actually machine learning can improve this, first and the most important thing is to identify your data sources. Know where the data is. Most companies will have an SQL database, will have some dumped file, PDF files and such, right? In different sources.
Yep.
So the first thing you always want to do is like identify the data sources, and if they're in different formats, and try to access them. If you can't access the data, then you probably can't use it. And go back to the product, look at what you need to solve that problem. If it's features, if it's the size of data you need, the training and such. So do something called feature selection. You list features you think will be important. All of them, you don't have to select them now. You'll do feature importance later. Just write as, look at the data, the features that are there, and then which ones will be useful, which ones are missing, which ones need to be merged from other sources. So for example, if you have an SQL database and text file, you need to merge them to get a feature, then do that first and then list your features. And then after you've done that, the next thing you want to do is visualize, of course, the data. As I said, that's a normal data science process. You visualize how your data is. You make sure there are no, how we call it, noise in the data. You want to remove noise and such. And outliers, there are some weird outliers. For example, if you're dealing with the temperature and the range is from 0 to 1 and you get a value 996, that's like it was either miscalculated or something like that. So you want to do like that visualization and cleaning of the data and such. And then before you jump into like very complex model, the first thing is always to have like a simple solution to the problem. I usually prefer regression. Regression is like straightforward.
Okay.
You do it quickly, and then you can actually see the performance of that item. If it's performing well, you can try to either do A/B testing with it, or you can try other advanced models and then try to compare them. The point is start small, start simple, and then move slowly, changing the model based on the performance. And then the last thing that's important in any engineering process, this general, even if you're an electrical engineer, a mechanical engineer, feedback loop. You need to have a feedback loop.
Okay.
You need to have a feedback loop in any system, any stable system. Feedback loop basically is from what you projected, what did you get? And is it merging, or how do you adjust your system to get the expected result? So How do you do if it's over if the system is giving an output that's way above the expected results? Maybe the system is need to be limited in terms of weight and such.
Okay.
If it's an giving out of bound solutions, you need to adjust the system to give you within the bounds. So always have a feedback loop. Don't deploy and then just wait for, hey, if I don't make money this month, then the system was bad. No, always have a feedback loop. If it's you're tracking customers in a screen, track them, know, did they actually check out or did they drop somewhere? Yeah. So always have a feedback loop in any system. Feedback loop will help you to improve the product and like change the model and track the progress of your model and such. Yeah.
Cool. It's comprehensive. Let me add just a little bit of complexity. What if it's an unsupervised problem?
Funny enough, I've only done unsupervised in a notebook. I've actually developed it.
Uh-huh.
Unsupervised, they are quite complex. I don't know, but I usually I think they also have feedback loops.
Okay.
Yeah, that's standard. You need to have feedback loop in the system.
All right.
Otherwise, you won't know you're doing the right thing or the bad thing.
Fair enough. Mm-hmm. And this process, rapid trying to get as much feedback rapidly as fast within a short time span.
Mm.
Maybe sometimes you're doing something and there's a cost to the time. So like there's a high cost to taking time to actually do these experiments.
Mm.
And someone, you know, is in a fix, you have to deploy something that's ready.
Mm.
Have you been in such a situation? How do you go about it?
That's a complex question. You want something perfect, but you don't have time.
Yes.
Okay, then talk first to the manager. Just tell him clearly you're pressuring me. First. Because things will happen. You'll, as I said, always deploy the simplest solution.
Okay.
And iterate through it.
All right.
So if the manager is saying, hey, I want a very complex reinforcement model.
Yeah.
In 2 days, and it has to be 90% accurate.
Okay.
Clearly, that's like very, I don't know, over ambitious,
yes,
right?
Yes.
So always, as data scientists, there's that problem, miscommunication. The managers don't understand what you're doing.
Yes.
The managers think it can be done in a day, and you actually know this thing it's testing. You're testing, you're changing, you're testing again, right? So at first, have that conversation with your manager. Give him like realistic timeline and don't kill yourself. And then the other question about having an overload of feedback, right?
Yes.
You're quickly iterating and then you're having all this feedback, you need to put them back into the system.
Yeah.
I think it depends on the CI/CD pipeline, the okay. CI/CD continuous integration pipeline. If the cost impact of changing something will be hard on customers,
yeah,
then try to make the system to be abstract as much as possible. Don't make the model to crash the system.
Okay.
The system itself is like, it should be independent. And then if the model should be either based on APIs to the model, so that when you change the model, you don't have to crash the system and customers can see the impact. But as always, start with A/B testing. Do something like 60-20-20. 60% should be on the stable model. 20% should be on a pre-tested model. 20% should be on the new model that you're working on.
Okay.
Something like that. Or you can reduce them.
Awesome. Yeah. You touched on something that that leads me to my next point. So you know, management, expectation management is something that's very critical in... if you're practicing data, right? Because there's this, you know, there's number one, there's an assumption that, yeah, as long as we have the data, then the solutions should be there. There's always that. So this is just one of the main challenges. So how do you deal with that challenge? And also leading on to that, what are the other challenges that you've come across that you feel, you know, you'd want to, you know, give pointers on?
Okay, I think I'll give them from perspective of like, to the fintech startup and the big companies.
Yes.
the fintech startup, I think there's more autonomy in what you do and the pace at which you go.
Okay.
You are given, you have a, something you need to achieve in that month or that quarter.
Yes.
So it's either up to you to deliver, test on your own timelines, just don't crash the system and deliver it in that quarter, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The point in a startup, you're just like, you have that autonomy, right?
Yes.
You own the data, there's no one, there's no structured process. So if there's pressure, then I think I've been lucky enough to work with understanding. First, as a young data scientist, you're starting out, please just don't overpromise things you've never done before.
Okay.
Yeah. Because if it's your first gig, you've taken a course online and then you've been offered a startup, don't overpromise and you've never done it before. Because you make a mistake of underestimating the effort needed.
Yes.
Always just give, I don't know if it's good, but I usually give, calculate the time you need and then add like 3 weeks on top. Yeah.
So it's a good hack.
Yeah. So if it was like you need to do it in a month, just tell him I need a month and a half to finish it.
Okay.
And then so that you buffer yourself from those expectation and then you end up disappointing your manager. So just, you don't need to do that. In a big company, it's more structured.
Okay.
It's very hard to miss a deadline because you're moving steps and everyone is like, there's that mentorship. Someone is looking what you're doing each day, each week.
Okay.
So if something was to be done this week, there's a senior person who already is advising you, is guiding you on how to do it and the possible approaches. You're not thrown into the data and told to have a solution. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay. So you always seem to be evolving and there's incredible change. And since data science is kind of a domain-specific job and we don't always know everything, how do you always stay grounded, like prioritize which skills you want to learn first to help you do a task?
The most important thing is, data science is evolving quickly and things are just changing overnight and weekly. So always understand the problem first before you jump into the tools. But the hacks I usually follow is just, I follow the researchers on Twitter Twitter mostly.
What's your Twitter handle? You want new followers?
Yes. My Twitter handle, I'll share that.
Okay.
So I usually follow researchers. If you follow researchers, for example, from research centers, they usually post their publications on Twitter.
Okay.
The archive links.
All right.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're saying at this 3 months I want to learn reinforcement learning, you will see like, hey, we published a letter, a paper on reinforcement learning. Look at it. You click on it. The title, interesting. Okay, let me download it. Not interesting. I'll just move on to the next one. So always follow social media people, these researchers. The next one is mailing lists. Join mailing lists. Mailing lists are very important because mailing list you need, once you join a mailing list, they usually send to your inbox.
Okay.
So for example, if you join there's this one by DeepMind, the mailing list. Whenever they publish something, they email you. Then you see it on the inbox. If it's interesting, you open it. If it's not, you always have an idea of what's going on. So you don't have to understand everything. Just know where the field is moving, what the current trends are and such. And of course, attend conferences. The Indaba, please. The Indaba is important. Conferences are important for sharing and just knowing what people are working, your peers and such.
Okay, cool. So in your experience across different sectors, you've deployed quite a number of models.
Mm-hmm.
What has been the feedback, or rather, what has been the general performance, and how practical is data science itself in real life situations?
Okay, so how practical they are, I think it's always, when you're starting out, it usually seems like it's a wrong move you're doing. because you don't have a grasp of the whole problem. You don't have a grasp of the data you have. You're not sure how customers are reacting, what you're trying to answer. So at the start, it's usually like it's like a wrong move. You usually feel like, hey, maybe actually this thing can't work. It's just papers and books.
Yeah.
But the fintech startup, the model was doing well as we progressed. It actually reached a point where the default rate were less than 10%. So you like, the only way you know the viability of that product, the performance, as I said, is having a feedback loop.
Okay.
If you're giving out loans to 10 people and you said 9 of them will repay, the feedback will answer, did the 9 actually repay?
Okay.
So give yourself some margin of error.
Okay.
So don't be strict, like if the model doesn't have 99.5%, then it's not okay. Yeah. So just have a strong feedback loop. Always monitor the customers who went through the model and how they actually ended up performing.
Okay. Yeah. And is performance, you know, generally playing out the same way across the different sectors, or there are some sectors which are just so hard to crack?
Yeah, fintech is so hard to crack.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know why, but it's just it's hard to predict people's behavior with money.
Okay.
But I think each sector has a criteria on how they judge their models.
Okay.
For example, in the medical field, it's the number of correct diagnoses you did.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If it's in the fintech, it's, for example, if it's loans, the number of repayments, or if it's fraud cases, the number of, how do they call it? I think it's true positives or something like that.
Mm.
How many fraudsters did you catch? And out of these fraudsters you catch, how many of them were not actually fraudsters? You made a mistake. Yeah.
All right.
So what is the biggest gap in the tooling or technology for data analytics today? What do you think is the biggest gap, rather?
The gap for tooling? Mm-hmm. I think automated data engineering tools.
Okay.
So most of the data engineers I interact with or I've talked with, they struggle setting up their Spark cluster, setting up some Hadoop cluster, configuring things on Kubernetes and such. And I think like if you have AutoML for training, if there was like auto data engineering. And then the most important thing is I understand why most people try to configure this thing from ground up. They have their private clouds.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if you go to like provided custom solution on these public clouds, they run on that cloud and you're tied to the infrastructure, right? Yeah. So if there was like that out or something, yeah, you just
plug and play.
Yeah. I always think like if there was like some scripts,
yeah,
you just run on your server, they pull, they provision the services, the network and the servers, and then you just feed in your input, the data.
Okay.
Yeah, so I think the tooling, I think it's the automated data engineering. I usually feel it's not well. And the other one is deploying models to production, the automated way.
Yes.
Most of the ways as I said, these cloud providers will let you deploy to production.
Yes.
But it's always on their cloud. It's always there to their infrastructure. You actually don't even know the model is running on which server.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Yes. It's serverless sometimes. Yes. Yes. Serverless. You just get the URL, customize it to your something and such.
Yep.
If you want to do logging, they log to their log system. You loop them from there. And most developers, they are paranoid. They want to do things on their server.
Yeah.
They want to get hands-on. So you find people trying to set up web servers, set up these models on themselves, scale them and such. So there was like an automated way of doing that, but on a private cloud.
Okay.
I think that would be like really nice.
Okay.
Kubernetes is heading there, but yeah, it's just like, it's not really specific to data.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
How do you see the role of data science evolving in Kenya in the next couple of years? Especially with a lot of awareness and more students getting into the field.
Yes, yes. I think the awareness is good. Like, you have a lot of meetups, a lot of groups that are supporting now this data conversations. So I really feel like data science in the next few years will get into like formal curriculum. Okay. Which will be really nice. Like, it will be now formal in campuses, in these tertiary schools, because now people are aware, like, this actually is a field, it's a career path for them, and it's viable. So, yeah, I think, like, it will get into the formal field, and we'll just see, like, more people who've had prior experience. Right now, most people are self-taught, but, yeah, I feel like we'll get people of this experience either from university or while they were early or younger than us existing.
Ah, so we probably will have a minister of data at some point. Eh?
And I think there was a data convinced? Bill that was based past the classic.
Yes.
I've not read it, but okay, let's hope the Kenyans actually follow that law.
Have you read it, Miriam?
No, I have not.
They did put a title for chief data.
There's
commissioner or something like that.
Commissioner. Commissioner of data.
That was Tigo's job. Data and innovation at deputy president's office.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's see. I think it's important, like, people follow these rules for privacy, confidentiality, because. Yeah, people have a right to their privacy and such.
Yeah, absolutely right.
Yes.
So technical guys, you know, just generally have a problem, you know, selling themselves. Mm. We tend to be, you know, shy guys. Mm. Don't want to speak in public, or rather find it hard to speak in public. But you, Miles, you get onto the stage and you blow things off there. So how do you find it easy to, you know, get out there and get that confidence? What are the pointers you'd want to share with someone who's, you know, like a kick-ass software dev somewhere or a data scientist, but just a technical guy who's a bit shy and too reclusive about, you know, selling themselves?
Just myself, I speak. Right now I'm speaking on the mic because if I see people, maybe I'll be shy. Yeah, so most people, we just tend to always sit on our laptops, do our stuff. But yeah, I think I usually feel like you need to get your technical background good. If you are, there's that something called Dunning-Kruger effect.
Yes.
You're starting out, you're very confident. Then you actually do something and realize, hey, I'm not that good.
Yeah.
And then as you do it over, you get good. And then you say, I'm getting good, but I'm not super confident because of something happened that time. So if you really, I feel like get your technical background first. Get it good, and then most people they want to learn from you. Don't feel like they're nagging you or they're like wasting your time. Just be more, how do I say, open-minded.
Okay.
People want to learn from you. People want to interact with you. So yeah, you don't have to be like very reclusive and on your own. And
yeah,
such.
I mean, communication is a success factor.
Yes. Communication is a success factor, especially in the data field. If you're a data analyst and you can't communicate the results.
Okay.
Like, yeah. So how will people even judge what you did? How will people understand? You just can't throw models and code at them.
Okay.
Just try to explain things. And the only way you can explain something is by actually understanding it.
Cool.
So for our curious listeners, any opportunities at Microsoft?
Yes, I'll answer that. Many opportunities generally, and yeah.
At well, Microsoft. Rather career opportunities
career
at Microsoft.
Career opportunities, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is Microsoft hiring?
Yeah. So, yeah, for Microsoft, it's kind of formal. We have the career site. So you just go to any browser, careers.microsoft.com, search for filter by data science, data engineering, and then filter by location, the country you're interested in, and then you see all these opportunities, apply. And then if you need, of course, a referrals, it's always nice to reach out to the dependent variable team, and then we are already ready to like do the referrals for you guys. Just apply. Don't feel like it's too much, you won't make it or something like that. Just apply. Even if it's something you think like won't happen, it might actually happen for you. Generally, for other, there are many startups in Nairobi. If you go to LinkedIn and just filter by data science roles in Nairobi, you have many startups looking out. So again, if you need referrals, reach out to the dependent variable guys here, Mariam, Victor. They know the guys in the field will actually do referrals for you. And yeah, so just use LinkedIn well. I usually advocate for LinkedIn because I feel like right now it's centralized.
Okay.
Everyone is like using your LinkedIn as your professional profile.
All right.
So have a nice LinkedIn profile. Polish it. Don't have a lot of Manchester Arsenal things there. Just throw those in other platforms.
Okay.
Have your professional, if you are commenting, if you're posting articles, let them align to your career path. Don't be posting things about, as I said, non-relevant. If a recruiter is looking at your LinkedIn profile, hey, this guy is arguing about Manchester and Arsenal. This guy is arguing about X and Y, but I'm actually looking for a data scientist, not this kind of personality. So have it very polished, focused, and follow the right people in that field.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, Miles, for taking the time to be here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Mariam and Anthony, for making this possible.
Thank you.
Miles, you're a hip-hop head.
There's a rumor going on.
Yeah. You drop bars. You're in Calicut L4. Anyway, Gerald, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah.
That's it, guys. Till next time. Bye.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.